Welcome to the Specialty Coffee Podcast by Storyline Coffee Roasters. Today we have a very special guest on, the founder of Fellow, who is Jake Miller. Jake, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I'm excited to talk about all the amazing things that Fellow is doing.
Thanks, Tyler. Excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us about Fellow and kind of how you started the company and how you got into creating products for the specialty coffee industry.
Yeah, easy. So we're actually in our 10th year. How crazy is that?
Congratulations.
July will be the 10-year anniversary of Fellow. And I think Fellow is a classic example of overestimating what you can accomplish in a year and underestimating what you can accomplish in 10. Like 10 years in, like, man, I never in a million years thought we'd have kind of the reach that we have today. But certainly in those first years, it was a very different story. And, you know, as you know, as a fellow entrepreneur, it's really kind of hard to get the wheels unstuck. So backstory here is Fellow just is born out of a personal passion for product design and coffee. And about 9 years ago or so, we launched our first product and introduced. I actually have it. I see it right here. I don't know if you do. You remember this at all, Tyler?
Yeah, I do. That's incredible.
Yeah. Our first product was the Duo Coffee Steeper, and we launched it on Kickstarter, and you know we pre-sold about $200,000 on Kickstarter, right? So you know, big thank you to the specialty coffee community for coming together and saying like, hey, we want to see more innovation on the equipment side. So that was very end of 2013. Raised the $200,000. I remember thinking, wow, this is easy. I'm rich. Like, let's go. It was just me at the time. And the very harsh reality is that Duo took, I think, about 18 months to actually deliver, and it cost about $300,000 just to deliver on the $200,000 Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, not a, you know, super awesome starting point, but I bet it felt great to kind of get that initially launched and like, hey, we're doing it. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, this is maybe not quite as easy as we imagined to create products, bring it to market, get it delivered and everything. So,
oh my God. I mean, every year since then, I've realized that making physical products is harder than I had thought, right? And that it just doesn't get any easier, right? As the team is trying to tackle higher complexity electric products specifically, like the complexity to do all this right is mind-blowing.
Yeah. So what's kind of your personal background? Do you have a background in engineering, or like what is kind of your personal background and what kind of made you want to be like, hey, I think we can do this. Let's do it. Were there a team around you? Was it kind of you with some friends, or what was kind of that looking like?
Yeah, I was the sole founder. I think when I start my next company, I'll probably bring on some co-founders to share in the highs and the lows. But it was just me. I'm not an engineer. I'm not a product designer. My background is in marketing and brand management, product management. I have always kind of loved working with my hands, and remember growing up, we grew up in the country and my dad had a wood shop in the back, and we spent, you know, a lot of hours there. And I reached a point, I think when I was 18, I decided to go into marketing instead of engineering. I could have easily went into engineering instead of marketing, but I didn't. But there was always that itch that I wanted to scratch. I wanted to design and sell physical things. I love that the team and I get to work on, you know, objects that people get to have an experience with every single morning. That's a pretty cool thought to ponder.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what did you learn from the first product you launched that, I mean, was successful, right? You brought it to market, you got it delivered to people's hands, but how were you able to kind of come over like, hey, this cost us $100,000 more than our what we gained from it. How were you able to still continue, and what lessons did you learn in that first product launch that now carried you to where you are now? Like, how much did you learn from that, and what kind of lessons did you have there?
Yeah. The big lesson was just how to make physical products, right? How to set up a supply chain, work with a contract manufacturer, work with designers, industrial designers, mechanical engineers. So that was just, for me, it was just, as a non-engineer, it was a two-year painful experience. It was essentially like an unpaid internship in product design and development, right? So that gave me a better chance at the next ones going better. On the actual product side, the big learning there was with Duo, this guy, I was trying to just really rethink how someone made coffee. So Duo was a new way to brew coffee. It was kind of the best of a French press meets the best of a pour over in this single contraption. And the reality was, although it made an incredible cup of coffee, it introduced a ton of complexity for the user, right? There's a lot of parts. It was hard to clean. So the big takeaway for me was, hey, Jake, let's actually take a step back. Let's focus on an existing category and just make a thing a lot better. Mm. And for us, that product number two that really put us on the map was the stovetop steg kettle. You know, pour over kettles existed at the time. There were just a couple at the time. But we went through a big design process and said, how can we make the best pour over kettle possible? So that was it was an easier product to sell. It was an easier product for consumers to just get. And thankfully that did quite well, and we were able to make payroll.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that was one of the first products. I remember there were early years for you guys that was getting used in like the World Barista Championship and in competitions. And I think that put it on a platform of like, hey, here's this company, a fellow, you know, like champions are using this product in the kettle to create their, you know, coffees and things. And so I think that kind of put you guys on the map, like you said, and, you know, I'm assuming flooded you guys with a lot of exposure and things like that. So,
yeah. And I think that was, we really designed for that competitor, right? Mm-hmm. We watched a bunch of people brew coffee. We interviewed, coffee lovers. We interviewed former kind of brewer champions and just tried to understand what they really cared about. And we basically said, if I'm going to design a tool for this person, what would that tool look like? Because it's not a kettle. It's a tool that helps this professional do a job. And kind of some of the big insights for the original Steg stovetop kettle was first, just there was a thermometer in the lid. Right, that these professionals care about water temperature. And before Steg, there were none of these pour over kettles had thermometers. Right, so that was pretty obvious. Right, they also cared deeply about ergonomics and what it feels like to pour. So this Steg was the first kettle that had a weighted counterbalanced handle. Right, so we spent a lot of time thinking about how the barista would hold that kettle. Right, different and the handle that we designed. Which has kind of a somewhat antler inspired, that's where the name Steg came from, can actually be held in multiple different ways depending on if the barista likes to pour this way or this way, or the thumb over the top or the thumb on the top. So that was a really fun project to design.
Yeah, that's amazing. So now that the second project has kind of come on, do you guys then decide to, because you've done a brewer, now you've done a kettle, when do you guys start then kind of branching out into some other things like a grinder? I think you've done another brewer. You guys then did like your mugs, like the Carter mug and things like that. When did you guys start like really trying to branch into other products and things that you were looking into doing?
Yeah, the first 3 years or so were non-electrics, right? We were still a small team. I think we were only four people at the time.
Wow,
we had done some ceramics, the Joey mug, if you're familiar with that. And then about 3 years in, going back to that user, the Steg user, we're like, okay, we've got a design that people love. This is a product that people seem to really be excited about. What's the next step in convenience for that user? And the obvious choice there was to add a plug, right? Like let's not burden you with having to put this on the stove and watch over it for 6 minutes. Let's like make it really convenient to hit that exact temperature that you're excited about. So we went back to Kickstarter, you know, and again, another shout out to the coffee community, because Fellow wouldn't exist without all these, you know, beautiful souls who have helped fund our development. So we launched Stag EKG on Kickstarter. I think that did about $500,000 in sales, and that was the cash that we needed to finish development and pay for that initial inventory run.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that was one of the, if not the first kettle that actually had where you could preset your temperature, you could maintain the temperature for the kettle. And I mean, it was one of those things that was kind of revolutionary, because like you're saying before, you would sit at your stovetop and wait for it to boil, and then you'd have like a thermometer, you know, like there's just all these kind of little quirks to just simply heating your water, where, you know, you set it to the desired temperature, you know, then go grind your coffee, you know, get your filter wet or whatever else you need to do to kind of prep for your pour over, and then you're off to the races. So,
yeah. And in that product, which, and I don't think a lot of people know this, but, you know, most electric kettles just have mechanical relays, right? They turn off and on. So you just hear that clicking, right? So when you're trying, let's say you're trying to hit a water temperature of 206 degrees, that kettle will get to 206 and then turn off and on. Click, 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 click. And although it says 206, you're really getting, you know, 204, 205, 207, 208. There's pretty big swings. The Stag EKG has a solid state TRIAC. So there's a mechanical relay, and then when you get within about 6 or 7 degrees of your set point, it switches to this mechanical relay. So there's no clicks, or sorry, this solid state TRIAC. So there's no clicks, and we're able to have much tighter resolution on temperature control.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. I don't think that I personally knew that, because, you know, in the early days, I had a kettle that literally had a button on the back, and you'd press it down, and it'd get to boiling, and then it'd click off. And then if you wanted to keep it back at that temperature, you had to click it on again. So it was like a manual relay. Yep. And so, yeah, but to actually keep it to a steady rate of like, hey, we're maintaining your temperature at 206 throughout the entire duration of your brew is a huge deal for people, especially in a bar setting, where you're doing a million things, you're talking to customers, you don't want to have to be focused on another variable. You want to be interacting and talking about the processing methods and varietals and, you know, all the exciting things that make specialty coffee great while you've got this amazing tool that's taking things off of your plate, which I think that product does very well. So that's great. So you guys then do the Stag EKG, and then what kind of, how do you guys develop from there?
Yeah, so in a post-Stag EKG world, and Stag EKG did very well for us, we kind of looked at ourselves and said, oh no, we're a kettle company. Hmm. And there's risk of that, right? Like, what if a better kettle comes along? What if pour-over kettles go out of fashion? Like, we don't want to be just a kettle company. We want to be a coffee product company. So that really was the driver for us to then look at the market and say, if we're going to go into another category, where should we go and where is the opportunity? And ultimately we landed on grinders, and specifically kind of the large flat burrs at a somewhat approachable price point with the Ode. So that was the step into the Ode. You know, broken record, but back to Kickstarter. Thank you, specialty coffee community. Yep. Ode raised, I think, about $1.2 million. You know, the rest is history. So that product has now won multiple awards and is really seen as one of the best grinders you can buy today.
Yeah, absolutely. How did your team grow kind of from that point where you just had four people? When you got into the electric grinding kind of sphere, did your team grow to then expand to be able to kind of meet some of those more diverse needs with creating a product like that?
Yeah. So basically kind of the team is about doubled in size every year. So, you know, so Fellow is today about 100 people. And, you know, a lot here in the Bay Area, some scattered across the U.S., and then we actually hired a full team in Asia to support our operations and supply chain. So as soon as COVID hit, I think it was March, April, we just said, hey, we need to be in our factories. And we can't travel right now, so let's actually have employees, you know, people who wear, you know, the fellow name tag and are on the payroll, be there to represent us. So that was a huge step for us.
Yeah. How has it been managing a team that is overseas, different time, you know, time zones and all that kind of stuff? How has it been kind of managing that diversification in your business on that side?
Yeah, it all starts with great people. And we hired this woman named Elaine to be the GM of APAC for us. We hired her and just said, Elaine, we trust you. Build out the team and build out the capabilities that we need to be successful. So Elaine's actually then hired the team around her. So because we have Elaine, it's gone really well. And we've been able to move faster. Our quality has improved. Our time to market has improved. We can now, you know, work in the U.S. for the day. China comes online. China works. We sleep. We come online.
Yeah.
They sleep. We work. And so you get this kind of like constant 24 hours of work with a team that we really trust.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's... So going back to the Ode, you guys, how long ago did you launch the Gen 2 Ode? And what was kind of your thought behind launching the Gen 2? Because that came out not too horribly long ago, correct?
Gen 2, I believe, was 6 months ago. I could be butchering that. But yeah, I think Ode was in the market for a couple years, and then we came out with Gen 2. The need for the Gen 2 was very much driven by the customer, right? Everything we do is, you know, one of our principles is center the customer always. We're big believers in human-centered design and getting really close to our customers and having that closeness influence our decisions as a business. So with Ode, you know, we had a hit on our hands. It won SCA Product of the Year, won a couple design awards. But we knew we could make it better, right? So, you know, let's say everything's a prototype, never stop improving. We listened to the customer, we identified kind of the big areas of improvement, and then the team set out to make it better. So they did about a year of work before we were able to launch Gen 2, maybe a little bit more. And the big areas of improvement on Gen 2 were... static reduction. So there's some anti-static technology in Gen 2. So we redesigned the geometry of the hopper so that the beans can feed a little bit easier, and we increase the capacity of the hopper. And then the biggest change is probably the Gen 2 burrs that we designed completely in-house. One of our VP of R&D, a gentleman by the name of Nick Terzulli, designed the Gen 2 burrs, and it took 23 prototypes before we got to burrs that we were excited about.
Yeah, that's
12
amazing.
Months of work. Yeah, and I remember Nick came to me and said, hey, can I, you know, the burrs that we have are good. I think we can do better. Can I take a month or two to try to figure this out? 12 months later, we figured it out, right?
He was satisfied.
That's what greatness requires. Like we could have launched bird number 6, right? That would have been an improvement from what we had, and most people would have been happy.
Right.
Cool. We wouldn't have.
Yeah.
So we wait.
No, it's amazing. It's a testament. I mean, 23 iterations of burrs is fascinating. And over a year of development to just be fine-tuning. I mean, I'm imagining the micro changes that you're making to get a product that you truly feel like, okay, this is excellence. This is the highest quality that we want to put forward to our consumers that they'll be really excited about. It's an amazing testament because, like you said, you could have stopped at 12 or 18 or even 20, but our goal is excellence here. We're not settling for anything less. And I think that it shows in just the aesthetics and the design. Like, your products are beautiful, which is one of the huge things. Like, I'm a big aesthetics guy, which is why I've always loved Fellow and followed you guys for a long time, is because, like, a lot of the products I have sit on my countertops, and I want something that looks really nice if it's going to be out 24/7 on my counter all the time. And so for me, it's always been, you can tell that there is a lot of effort and time put into the design and aesthetics of your products. And then, you know, on the internals, like, it performs incredibly well. And so it's a testament to your guys' excellence that you clearly have shown in your products. So,
yeah. And that, at least we try to do both, and it's really hard. Yeah. But Tyler, if you take one of our products and you put it in your cupboard, we failed as designers. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, these things should be displayed.
Yeah, and they're beautiful. And I think that's what I love about it is, like, it's not only... Because some people will compromise aesthetics for quality, right? Like, it doesn't have to look great, but if it's the top of the line, like, I'll sacrifice there. But I'm like, you know, I think you can do both. And it's not easy, right? Like, I say that. I haven't designed a single product, but you guys have done an amazing job at that. Talk about your anti-static technology. I just purchased the Opus, which is your newest grinder, which we'll get to in a little bit, which has that same technology. But kind of share some about that, how it's designed, how it works. Because it performs really well. I was amazed at how well it actually does work.
We've been really, really pleased with it. And there's a very noticeable difference between Ode and Ogen too. But basically what we're trying to do is just remove the static, right? So that there's a couple pins in the grind chute, and as kind of the grinds pass through those pins, we're able to take static, some of the static out of the equation.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, for so long you have these, like, misters and little spray bottles. And I had one, right, for the Opus. And I was like, okay, let me just grind without it. And I was like, man, I don't even need this anymore. This is great. Yeah. It just removes another step of, like, I don't have to spritz my beans before I drop it in the hopper. Like, there's no static here. Like, I hardly have to use a WDT tool when I'm, you know, getting my puck ready for espresso. I'm like, man, this is crazy. Like, there's no clumps. There's no static here. Like, so, yeah, I mean, it really does work well, which I was truly impressed with the Opus, which will kind of bring us into that I keep talking about. So share with us the Opus. That's kind of your guys' newest grinder. It just hit the market recently. Talk about everything that went into that and what kind of what your goals were behind the scenes and what you then brought to market.
Yeah, the Opus was a almost 3-year labor of love. Like, this was one of the hardest products that we've designed yet. And, you know, when we kicked this thing off years ago, we just said our goal is to design the best sub $200 all-purpose grinder that the world has ever seen. Huh. And that was the mission. Had to be sub $200, right? What we want to do there is bring more people into specialty coffee. You know, a win for us and a win for you is more people falling in love with the industry that you and I love. So we thought price was really important there, sub $200. And we wanted it to do true espresso. We're talking 9-bar espresso shot on a lever machine, and do a pretty dang good job across the full spectrum. We couldn't be more proud of what we just launched. And, you know, we're now, I think, three weeks or so post-launch. The reviews have been very positive. People like you are, you know, getting to use it and have used it for weeks and seem to really like it.
Yeah, it's truly, I mean, I think the biggest thing, like, a lot of my customers come to me and are like, hey, I want to get an espresso machine. Like, what would you recommend? And the first thing I always tell them is, like, slow down, get a good grinder.
Buy a grinder. Yep.
And it's hard, though, because then I'm like, hey, here's a $400, $500, $600 grinder that I would recommend for you because I think it's that important to get good espresso. And then they're like, well, wait, I've got to then spend like $700, $800, $900, $1,000 on my espresso machine. Now I'm $1,500 in. I don't have any of the other tools kind of that go in with it. And it becomes a barrier of like, man, I thought I could maybe do this for $1,000 or less. And all of a sudden it's way more than that. And now I can be like, hey, listen, like, you don't need two grinders. You can do one grinder, less than $200. It's super affordable. And it performs really well. Like, I was blown away at how easy it was to dial in my espresso the first time I did it. It took me 2 shots and it was dialed in. I was like, oh, this is a piece of cake. Like, which typically is not the case. I mean, you can spend so much time just dialing in a you know, espresso. And so it's super user friendly, and I've just been amazed at how well it performs for the price point. I'm like, man, this is incredible. It really is a good
and on the espresso side, a lot of that is just the ability to get the torque required to grind coffee that fine. And that was, you know, when you think about it, the product development cycle, like, you know, these things should take 18 months, give or take. You know, this one pushed a lot longer than that. And the challenge there was achieving the torque required, right? Because you can get torque by just spending a lot of money on a bigger motor. But now I've just blown past my $200 MSRP target. Right. So, you know, we worked for close to a year on a worm gear concept that we just kept iterating on, and it just kept failing. And a year in, we threw it in the trash. And, you know, it was a sad but necessary day for us. Like, we're like, goodbye. Wow. Goodbye last year. Gosh. Let's start over and figure this out. And I'm so glad we did. Like, yeah, we launched later than we wanted, but the product we launched, we're really proud of.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. It's crazy. Go ahead, Jake.
And part of that just has to deal with reliability. So what we're talking about internally is, like, we need to make products of permanence. We need to make products that last. And that original concept, it probably would have failed after a year, right? And Opus, we actually increased our warranty. So Opus ships with a 3-year warranty if you register the product, right? That's best in industry at a sub $200 price point. So we've got to make sure that the product actually works for three years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's amazing the torque that is in that grinder. I mean, there is a video with Lance Hedricks where he ground green coffee. Like,
yep.
That doesn't happen in a sub $200 grinder with ease. Like, it just cranked through it. You know, obviously wouldn't recommend doing that on a regular basis, and there's no need to, but it just shows the testament of, like, you guys spent a year in development on a motor and said, nope, that's not good enough for us, and then found something that works and works incredibly well, to the point that, like, you can throw practically, you know, green coffee, which is rocks. Like, it's so hard.
I remember Lance was, I think he was asking us, like, hey, like, Jake, will it do, like, ultra light roast coffees? Think like of the Nordic style. And the response was like, Lance, why don't you throw some green coffee in there and see how it works?
Yeah.
Done.
Had you tried it before, or did you just kind of step out on a limb and be like, hey?
No, we knew.
Okay.
We did a little bit of this and kind of, I think, some of the teaser stuff of the, like, will it grind challenge. Mm-hmm. So, like, internally, we're trying to figure out, like, because for reliability testing, like, we want this thing to fail, right? So we can figure out what breaks and then make that thing stronger and then fix it and then have it fail again and fix it. We got to the point where I think we were throwing steel, like, little steel balls into the grinder to finally get this thing to jam.
Dude, that's crazy. Yeah, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, it does really, because, like, I was so impressed when he did that. I was like, holy cow, like, because I've, like, thrown a green coffee bean in your mouth. It's raw. Like, it's rock hard. But to throw a steel ball in there and it that be the one thing that finally jammed it up is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you, I mean, it's a
listeners
testament.
Listeners out there, we do not recommend grinding green coffee.
Yeah, there's no need to. It's going to taste horrible.
There's no need. So don't, it does. Yeah, don't worry. It.
Just watch the video. Trust the fact that it can do that. Know that it could maybe grind a steel ball also. Don't try it. There's no reason to. No, that's amazing. The one, I think, the only critical part, which I haven't had any issues with, but I think for the listeners, it could be helpful. There's micro adjustments. It's easy to understand, but is plus get you finer or does minus get you finer? Like, that's really the only answer that I think people need to know for the Opus on the micro adjustments. What is it?
Minus gets you finer.
Easy enough.
So think of these as, each micro adjustment is 2/3 of a macro adjustment. You know, so if you want to do, if you're just doing espresso, like, turn that blue dial all the way to the furthest minus side, and then you're just going to open up more range on the far end. It's a great place to start.
Yeah,
looking back, do I wish we would have figured out a way to have the micro adjustments be accessible from the exterior of the grinder? Like, yes, I do. Like, you've got to take the hopper off, but it is such low friction to introduce a feature that really expands the capabilities of the grinder. Like, with the micro adjustments, you can get to, I think, about 16 micron between clicks. Like, it's pretty impressive for a sub $200 grinder.
No, yeah, it's amazing. And it's so easy. And the reality is people should be regular. Like, for one, you take off the hopper to clean it, and it's so easy to clean. Like, the burrs pop right out, just twist out, you dust them off, you're good to go. So it's such a user-friendly piece to just, you twist, it clicks off, it gives you an audible beeping noise when it's, like, where it should be. You know, so there's no, like, guessing, like, okay, do I put it on back right? Like, nope, okay, it's where it needs to be, I'm good to go. So it's such a normal, easy, because I, like, my other grinders, man, I hated cleaning those things. Like, it was just such a pain, you know? Like, I've got to, like, twist this thing off and then put this screw in and take this screw out, and it's like, man, I just, like, I don't clean it as often because it's such a pain, where with the Opus, it's so easy. Like, I just twist the hopper off, you know, twist one thing, it's out, you know, and so it's easy to get to those micro adjustments. It doesn't take hardly anything to get there. And so,
how easy it is to clean is something that I don't think it's gotten enough press yet. And I think people will, as they use it more, they're going to realize that. Like, when you take that hopper off and you look into the grind chute, like, it's a true vertical grind path into the catch cup. You know, basically every other grinder, there's a step, and then there's a little exit chute, and there's a little impeller that then, like, brushes the coffee grinds into that chute and then down into the catch cup. So you get a lot of retention at that step point, where Opus doesn't have that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can clean this thing in 7 seconds.
Yeah, it's so easy, which makes people clean it all the time, right? Which then is going to extend the life of your coffee. You're not going to have crossover from coffee to coffee. Like, the amount of times I do a batch brew with the Opus in the morning. I then do a double shot of espresso right after it. And then at night I'm doing a decaf espresso. And, like, I can clean it in no time between each one of those different coffees that I'm using. And it's so easy. And so that's also going to extend the life of your grinder. It's also going to just not get any of the crossover between coffees. And, yeah, it's a piece of cake. Yeah. And you're not having any of that retention built up in there where you've got to, like, be my prior grinder. Like, you had to get this little, brush in there and try to, like, knock it out. And it would always – it's like there's no good way to get to it because it's an L shape. Like, you're either having to come from the top down or the side in. And you're sometimes just packing coffee grinds harder in there, you know? So, it's super easy to clean. And I think there was a review I watched of just the lack of retention. They compared a couple of grinders, Opus being one of them. They had the best retention, or lack of retention, I guess would be the best way to say it, compared to any of the grinders. Like, there just hardly was any from coffee in to coffee out. So, yeah, it's amazing. So you guys also don't just do products. You also do fellow drops. Talk a little bit to us about fellow drops and what that is and how people can source amazing coffees through you guys.
Yeah, we're a year into fellow drops. And think of fellow drops as, you know, it's clearly not our core business. Fellow drops is like our gift to the specialty coffee community. We've built a product that, like, we internally just wanted it, and so we built it. And what Fellow Drops is it's a super convenient text to order platform. Every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. we text you about a coffee. If you like it and want it, respond to that text message with the number of bags you want, and then we ship it out the next day. Frictionless, easy, and so what you don't see from behind the scenes is we have actually 3 Q graders on our team. So we're sampling coffees constantly. So the coffees that we're offering every Tuesday, That might be our favorite coffee of 5 or 10 coffees that we cupped over the last couple of months. So in terms of curation and for the user, it's just like, yeah, we know that these coffees through drops are going to be at a certain quality level and then delivered in a very kind of convenient, frictionless way.
Yeah. For coffee roasters or people that maybe want to submit a coffee to Fellow Drops, how do you guys source different roasters to bring on? What kind of like quantities and things like that? Like, how does that side of it work from the like wholesale side to you guys?
Yeah, we have a really simple intake form on our website. I think it's at the bottom of the drops page. And then either Haley or Eric on our team will screen those submissions, and we'll figure out samples and cup and go from there.
Okay, cool.
It's been really, really fun for us to work with. You know, we've worked with roasters now around the world, right? So I think about once every month or two, we'll do an international drop. So we actually will kind of air freight in a pallet of coffee, roasted coffee from a partner outside of the U.S. and then ship out to the drops is a U.S. only program today, and then ship out to our drops customers. So it's a very kind of cost-efficient way to get a bag of coffee from a roaster in Europe because you don't have to pay shipping from Europe to your house.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. Yeah, and you get to experience, I think one of the cool things about specialty coffee is how different things are across the world. Like, it's totally different in New Zealand than it is here, to Australia, to, you know, Guatemala. Like, there's all these different variances and styles and just tasting and milks and all that kind of stuff that goes into it. So it's a cool, easy access way for people to try out a coffee that was roasted in New Zealand or in Australia or wherever it may come from. So,
and when we thought about, you know, like, our mission is to help you brew great coffee at home. And for the first 8 years, it was through product design. And then we realized that it's got to be a little bit more than that, right? Because if you're using all of our stuff, but the coffee you're brewing is bad, you can't make bad coffee taste good with a great grinder. Like, it's just, it's not good coffee. So then we said, hey, to really live up to kind of this mission, we need to figure out how to help our customers on the coffee side. And then, you know, then you say, okay, well, Jake, do you start a roastery, right? Like, do you start sourcing and roasting your own coffees? And it was a very quick, no way. Like, we are part of this community. You know, we sell our products through hundreds of roasters around the world. And we're like, no, we're actually going to harness the power of that roaster network and then bring those roasters to our customers. So the roasters get a ton of exposure. You know, we get great coffee. Our customers, you know, get to brew great coffee. So it's been it's still a very small business for us, but it's been just a ton of fun to work on.
Yeah, that's amazing. And also, speaking to your guys', you mentioned it, speaking to your wholesale partnership with, you know, kind of what a roaster or a different, you know, whether you be a cafe, like, the access that you've given people to be able to resell your products is amazing. And it's so easy to use. Like, you set up an account, you then get like the wholesale pricing sheet, you can then source what products you then want to resell. And, you know, it's super easy to use. And it just goes back to show your guys' mission and heart, which is like, hey, we're a people first coffee company, whether that be through Kickstarter or wholesale, you know, like, all of those things just show that, like, hey, we're about the community. We want to connect with you. We want to further what you're doing. And it's super easy to use for those of you who may be listening and interested in that wholesale side of things.
Yeah. Our VP of wholesale, John, talks a lot about being easy to work with. And what you just described is that goal. It's, you know, we win, you win, and the customer wins. So.
Yeah, absolutely. There's getting great products in return. Speaking of that, what are some maybe new products that you're excited about or new things you guys may be stepping into coming in the future?
Yeah, two big things I want to talk to quick. First, we just opened our second retail location in Los Angeles. So we're in Venice, California, on Abbot Kinney, right in the middle of the block. So this is the Fellow store number 2. Go in, say hi to the team there. Beautiful build out. We're constantly brewing coffees from all these great roasters that we've been talking about. You can come in, talk to the team, learn how to use our stuff, hear about what coffees we're loving that week. So that's number one. So if you're in San Francisco, we have a store here on Valencia Street. If you're in Venice, California, we have a store on Abbot Kinney.
That's awesome.
And the second thing that I'm excited... Oh, go ahead.
Do you guys serve... Like, do you do espresso? Is it just, like... Is it just drip coffee, pour-overs, that kind of stuff? Like, what can a customer kind of expect walking into the door? Obviously, to be able to use and see all your amazing products firsthand, but what does that kind of experience look like?
It's slightly different based on location. So in San Francisco, we've got a little more space. So we have the retail space, and then we have what we call the playground. So you can actually come in as a customer, buy 22 grams of coffee, and brew your own cup. We're not a fully functioning cafe, right? You can't leave. You can't leave with a latte, but you can leave with a cup of coffee as long as you make it yourself. And we'll have a brew guide there, walking you through how to use our equipment and maybe kind of tweaking the recipe for that specific coffee.
That's super fun.
The LA store, much smaller footprint, so we don't have the room to kind of do those brew stations. But we have a brew station there where our store associates are constantly brewing and happy to talk about kind of the techniques that they're using.
That's awesome. Sounds super fun. So the next thing that you guys are wanting to get into is what?
So the next big launch, I think we're about 45 days away, we've got a coffee scale.
Hello.
So I'm not going to go into too much detail about the scale yet, but we're really excited because this is the last product you need to go from a bean to a cup of coffee with only Fellow stuff.
Wow.
So it took us 10 years to get here, but it's a pretty fun moment for us to know that you can do all of this with Fellow gear. Don't
That's
have
amazing.
To. Like, other people make great stuff too, but for us, the person who wants kind of like the brew bar that looks great, everything works together, like this is the last piece.
That's amazing. What are you guys like with the scale? Is it like, can you share on like connectivity? Is it going to be like Bluetooth? Will you be able to access it via your phone or?
No, we explored kind of connectivity. We explored kind of some Bluetooth. You know, our Steg EKG Pro and Pro Studio have Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, right? So there's some work and learnings from that product. But at the end of the day, we just said, what does this customer really care about? Like, how often are they actually pulling out their phone? Do they care about, you know, recipes here and then a pour over kettle here? And, you know, for some people, sure, but for most people, no. So what we built is just a beautiful, highly accurate, really well-built, reliable scale with a really killer display. And you can really focus on making coffee.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's great. I'm super excited for that product to launch. And yeah, it's an amazing testament from, you know, looking back 10 years ago, your first product, Kickstarter, $200,000 in sales, $300,000 in to where you're at now, to where you literally could sit behind a bar with all Fellow products and brew from bean to cup all with your products and it have it look amazing in the process. So it's an amazing testament for a company. And in 10, I'm sure, long years of highs and lows, I'm sure you've been through it all as an entrepreneur. What advice would you give someone as an entrepreneur through all of the things that you've done? What lessons have you learned that you'd like to share?
Work really hard to surround yourself with great people. Like Fellow today, I actually do very little. I'm like embarrassed to say that, but it's because the people that we have on this team are just better than me at what they do. Right. So my job now is to generally point people in the right direction and let them do their thing. Can't do that in the first couple of years. Like, you know, the first 4 or 5 years, I was a little bit of everything, but that's changed as we've grown. And then the second piece of advice is just entrepreneurship is really hard. So if you're going to do it, make sure you're all in and make sure the thing that you choose, you know, whether it's selling scrub brushes with smiley faces or pour over kettles, like, make sure you're really passionate about the work you're doing. because it's that passion, and that passion alone that's going to kind of get you up in the morning and push you forward.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, Jake, if there's, you know, there's amazing products, whether it be the Opus, you guys have a new scale coming, you've got two stores, one in San Francisco, one in L.A., obviously fellow products on Instagram. Are there any other ways people can find your products, connect with what you're doing, or anything you want to leave people with before we wrap up?
No, don't be a stranger. We're here. We're real people. We're based in San Francisco. You know, message us, fellowproducts.com, Instagram. We'll respond. Or just stop by and say hi.
That's awesome. Jake, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And, yeah, continue creating amazing products for all of us in the specialty coffee industry. We're huge fans here at Soylent Coffee Roasters and love everything you guys are bringing to market. So thanks for doing amazing things.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Cheers.